Got a question for you this morning. Do you consider yourself privileged or disadvantaged? Capable or incapable? Powerful or vulnerable? Do you consider yourself privileged or disadvantaged? Capable or incapable? Powerful or vulnerable? It's something worth thinking about this season. It really informs how we respond to the numerous appeals that will be coming our way this time of year. Requests for our time, our treasure, and our talents. Of course, sometimes our own self-analysis isn't always correct, is it? I mean, the mother with three children under five smiles when her younger sister complains about being so busy. The deficit-financed college student smirks when his grandpa pleads poverty after returning from a vacation down south. The wheelchair-bound grandma, who's constantly knitting up a storm, laughs when her granddaughter laments her own lack of skills and talents. Just don't know what to do, Grandma. Do you consider yourself privileged or disadvantaged? Capable or incapable? Powerful or vulnerable? Well, if you're unsure whether you can trust your own judgment, just consider some of these self-assessment questions posed by Margaret Wendt in the Globe and Mail. Now, I want you to count these, okay? So, every item you can affirm gives you 1 point. You can count them on your fingers, and if you have to, you know, use your feet, you can take off your shoes. There'll be bonus points as well. So, first question, or affirmation. Your family income is $120,000 or more, or your wealth is over $1 million. 2 points if you can agree with both. Your mother graduated from university. That's another point. Maternal education is a good predictor of the children's success in education. You know how to paddle a canoe. You've been outside of North America at least twice. Extra points, one extra point if you visited New Zealand or Australia. Your family helped you with a down payment on a house, or you did so for your kids. And then 1 point for each kid you helped. When you see two forks in a play setting, you know which one to use first. Okay, I'm going to throw in a couple of my own, a few of my own. You own the home you are living in, or someone else shovels the driveway. You came to church in an automobile, not on a bike or public transport. You own a set of golf clubs or downhill skis or an easel. Count 3 points if you have them all. And at dinner, there is often a choice of more than one dessert. Okay, so how did you do? How many of you said yes to at least 5 of these questions? Yeah? True confessions, I scored 8. Now, I know, folks, it's not a fair survey. There were no questions about clipping coupons or turning down the temperature or refusing to buy a new vehicle, which are some of the ways we hide our power from ourselves and from others, right? But what does that test say about our privilege? And maybe more importantly, do you think that privilege demands responsibility? Today, our Bible lesson brings us out of the land of Judah into the city of Susa, which is today in modern-day Iran. Last week, the prophet Habakkuk was warned about the arrival of the Babylonians. As God promised, Babylon conquered Judah. As God promised, Babylon itself was then conquered, defeated by the Persians. Now, when Babylon defeated Judah, many of the people were deported to the outskirts of the empire. But during the Persian period, the deported Jews were allowed to return to their homeland. Of course, many had settled. Many decided to stay. Some of this diaspora even made their homes in Susa, which was the very heart of the foreign empire. Under Babylon, things weren't so going so well. Under Persia, things were looking up, especially when a Jewish girl became the leading lady in the empire. But as we heard this morning, not long after Esther's coronation, Haman, one of the king's chief officials, became, well, enraged. Enraged at a Jewish man named Mordecai for a perceived slight. And Haman convinced King Xerxes to allow a decree to be issued that all the Jews be exterminated. Which brings us into today's story. Mordecai is Queen Esther's cousin. More than that, he helped raise her. He brought her up as his own daughter. When Mordecai hears about this genocide in the works, he pleads with Esther to intercede with the king. Esther, well, she's a little reticent. She's not convinced she's the right person for this job. Rather than seeing herself as a person of power and influence, she sees herself as vulnerable. And so she replies to Mordecai. Mordecai, everyone who works for the king here, even the people out in the provinces, know. They know that there's a single fate for every man or woman who approaches the king without being invited. Death. The one exception is if the king extends his gold scepter, then he or she may live. And by the way, it's been 30 days now since I've been invited to see the king. Esther's a smart cookie. She knows the law. She knows that she can't just barge in on her husband. And after a month apart, she's not even sure that the king is still interested in her. I mean, she wasn't his first wife. She might not be his last. Esther is afraid to help Mordecai. She's convinced she's incapable and vulnerable. But Mordecai won't let up. He asks her to reconsider. Who knows, Esther? Who knows? Maybe you were made queen for such a time as this. Maybe all this wealth, power, privilege, luxury was given to you for such a time like this. Esther's in a tough spot. You can imagine her thinking, who? Me? I don't have any power or authority. I'm just an orphan Jew who doesn't even belong here. I'm just faking my way through this. How about sending someone else to talk to the king? Esther ruminates over this challenge. In the end, she does the right thing. She sends a message back to Mordecai asking him to gather the Jews in the capital and have them fast for her. Afterwards, she will go to the king. We looked at this story earlier this spring, and if you haven't ever done it, I encourage you to read the rest of the story. It's, I guess, during the festival of Purim, Jewish people reenact the story, and it really is a farce the way it's laid out. There's lots of humor, lots of reversals, at the same time underscoring some serious stuff about real threat in a real harsh world. But as it works out for Esther, the Jewish people have an amazing victory over their enemies. Now, we can infer from our story pretty easy that Esther felt vulnerable, incapable, and disadvantaged. Sure, she was in an important position, but that didn't make her feel secure. Really, it was only when she took that risk for her people that I think she would ever begin to realize just how privileged, capable, and powerful she really was. I'm sure you all see the implications of this story, right? If Esther was invited to tackle her fears and take risks for her own people, we are similarly invited to tackle our worries and take risks for those whom Christ claims as his own. The hungry, the thirsty, the strangers, the naked, the sick, even the imprisoned. How about that? We may think we are unable to do anything for these people. We may not have the faintest idea how to help them. But when we step out in faith, we may find ourselves more powerful than we ever imagined. Amy and I have made some new friends through the girls' dance classes. One family lives on an acreage on the other side of Savannah. The dad's apprenticing as a baker. Mom works for an MLA. They invited us to hang out with them a couple Saturdays back. They were having an open house of sorts. You see, their son, Lachlan, I think he's around 12 years old. He has this Christmas tradition called Hungry Tummies. He hosts this annual fundraiser for the food bank. To help him with his project, the family was offering fresh coffee and fresh donuts, remember, Dad's an apprentice baker, to everyone who stopped by to make a donation. Now, the other day I asked how things were going, and by the way, Amy, I got permission to tell this story. Mom said that Lachlan was a little discouraged. He had lost some momentum in the project since they had changed neighborhoods. She then went on to tell me that so far he's raised $360 in cash and about 300 pounds of non-perishables. Now, keep in mind, there's another group I'm associated with who wear a lot of green. 80 of them went together on a food drive, operating with two teams at two locations, replete with media involvement. They raised, well, about $2,000 in cash and about 2,000 pounds of food. So do the math, though, right? Do the math. This young person is definitely punching above his weight. A boy at an age that we might dismiss as, well, what could he do about these big problems in our city or in our world? Well, he's learning that he is quite capable and quite powerful. I wonder what we might accomplish, both individually and collectively, if we decided to take similar risks in our lives. Sometimes I think we imagine that we are where we are for our own enjoyment. Could it be that God has gifted us in this way for the world around us? As Mordecai said to Esther, who knows? Maybe you've been put in this position for such a time like this. Amen.